Through this tape are made available the words of the world's greatest contemporary mystic, Osho, previously known as Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh. Thousands of his discourse tapes are available worldwide. Many, many people have been transformed through listening to them. This is an invitation to experience the vision of Osho. In these excerpts, Osho describes the way in which the mind works and explains his insight that the mind cannot be controlled by repressing it. It must be transcended through meditation and watching.
Try to understand the mechanism of the mind. The mind can only live either out of past or out of future. The mind feeds on that which is not. The mind lives through that which is not. The past is no more, the future is not yet. Both are non-existential. And the mind feeds on the non-existential. Hence, those who have come to see their mind say that mind is non-existential. Because it lives on the non-existent, it cannot be existent itself. It is a shadow. It is not reality. One has to stop rushing, running. That's what meditation is all about. Stopping the mind here now. Bringing it to the present. And you will be surprised. The moment you bring it to the present, it melts and disappears. It is like you take a candle in your dark room and darkness disappears. The darkness cannot face the candle. If the candle is not there, the darkness is there. Bring the light in and the darkness is no more there. The darkness was only the absence of light. It was absence. It had no existence of its own. It was shadowy, non-existential. You cannot bring darkness in a room. And you cannot throw darkness out of a room. You cannot do anything with darkness directly, because nothing can be done directly with that which is not existent. You can do something with light. Light has existence. Even if you want to do something with darkness, you will have to do it with the light. If you want no more darkness, bring light in. If you want darkness, put light off. But you are doing something with the light, and something happens to darkness. Darkness is a shadow, absence of light. It has no positivity in itself. It is simply negation. So is mind. It is the absence of the present. If you are present in the present, mind disappears like darkness. If you are not present in the present, mind is there. Mind can exist only if you rush and run. The more you rush, the more mind you have. The less you rush, the less mind you have. And if you are suddenly quiet and calm, not going anywhere, past or future, not going at all, no movement in the mind, all is quiet, not a ripple, you will be surprised, there is no mind in you. Mind is negativity. No mind is positivity. In language, no mind seems to be a state of negation because of the word no. And mind seems to be very positive. But that is not true. No mind is a positive phenomenon. Mind is a negative phenomenon. Mind cannot face no mind. And all the mystics down the ages have been emphasizing only one thing. The mystics may be Buddhist, Hindu, Christian, Mohammedan, it doesn't matter, because a mystic is not confined by any outer religion. But the message is very clear, single and one. The message is attain to no mind. Become a no mind. How to become a no mind? Exist in the present. The mind will give you 1001 arguments. It will say, if you don't plan ahead, you will miss. If you don't prepare now, what you are going to do tomorrow? What you are going to do tomorrow? The tomorrow has to be planned today. It is very clever in reasoning. Impotent existentially, but very potent rationally. It will say, if you don't look back, how you are going to learn out of your past? One has to look back. One has to sort out things. One has to continuously go back to learn, to condense essential lessons so that you can use them in the future. And one has to plan for the future. One has to be ready for the future. Logical, rational, convincing. But remember one thing. If you have lived your past, and who else has lived it? Then the lesson has gone deep into your blood and bones, into your marrow. You need not remember it. It is digested in you. People remember or try to remember things only which have not been digested, which are not yet part of your being. If something becomes part of your being, you need not think about it. It is there. If you are burned by fire, next time you come across fire, you don't have to repeat. You don't have to tell your mind, listen, last time you were burned by fire, it hurts very much. Now don't go near it. You don't do this syllogism. This syllogism will look very silly. You have been burnt, now you know. There is no need to repeat it. You will avoid the fires. The knowledge has become part of your being. There is never any need to go into the past. And who is going to plan for the future? You are planning for the future. If you are capable to plan right now, why you cannot do it tomorrow when the situation confronts you? For example, you are going tomorrow for an interview. You are thinking about it. What I am going to say, how I am going to enter in the office, how I am going to sit. You are preparing for it. It is going to happen tomorrow. Tomorrow you will be 24 hours more wiser. Why plan for it today? You will be there. Nobody else is going. You will be there giving the interview. Why can't you be spontaneous? Why you can't trust yourself? And I am not saying that you are not to book for the train if you are going tomorrow. I am not saying that you are not to think ahead how much money you have and how much you can waste in a certain thing, how much you have to save. Those are trivia. They don't disturb you. They are mundane things. When I am saying don't project in the future, I mean the psychological future. And when I say don't go into the past, I mean the psychological past. Somebody insulted you yesterday. Now don't brood over it. There is no need. Don't play with the wounds. It will hurt more. And if you face the man today, don't react out of your yesterday. Don't say to yourself, because this man insulted me, now I have to take revenge. Look at the man as he is right now. He may be coming to you to apologize. Look at him as he is right now. Don't look through the past. Otherwise, you will be misinterpreting him. This happens every day. You say something, your wife understands something else. The wife says something, you understand something else. Communication seems to be impossible. By and by, husbands and wives become afraid of saying anything at all. Because the moment you say, there is misunderstanding. Why can't people who love each other, who live with each other, understand each other? The problem is past. The wife interprets through the past. The husband interprets through the past. Nobody is listening to the present. Nobody is there. They both are there like ghosts. The past is there. The present is not there. And because of the past, the clash. One of the greatest problems facing humanity is communication. How to communicate? How to say things that you are not misunderstood? But even if you are silent, silence can be misunderstood. It is misunderstood. If the husband is silent too much, too long, the wife jumps over. He says, what is the matter with you? Why are you silent? Now, even silence cannot be understood rightly. Because of the past, because of your loaded mind, everything goes astray. Everything becomes entangled. Everything becomes complex. And because of the past, you cannot listen to the present clues. Those who have been working in the world of communication, and who has been searching for the mechanics and dynamics of communication, they say 70% communication is non-verbal. But you don't see that 70%. Your husband is saying something to you, your wife is saying something to you. Those words are only 30% of the communication. The body is saying something, the body language. The face is saying something. The tone, the eyes. All those things are saying, the 70% consists in them. But who is there to see that? You simply listen one word and you immediately go into the past and you know what she means. And before she has completed the sentence, you have already arrived at a conclusion. You are already ready to answer. You have not listened to her, and your answer is ready. When two persons are talking, just watch their faces. One is saying something, the other is preparing how to answer it. He is not listening. I have heard. It happened in a university, two professors went mad. It is not surprising. In fact, the surprising fact is what others were doing, why they were not mad. To be a professor and not mad is not right. Something is abnormal. A professor has to be normally mad. So there was nothing exceptional about it. Both were friends. Both were kept in the same asylum room. The psychiatrist who was looking after them was surprised by one thing, that whenever they will talk, one will listen very attentively, so attentively that the psychiatrist has never seen anybody listening so attentively. And he will keep quiet, the one will remain completely silent and attentive and listening. And when the other will stop, then the one who was patiently listening will start. And the problem before the psychiatrist was this, that their sayings were not related to each other at all. One was talking about the sky and the other was talking about the earth. And one was talking about east and the other was talking about the west. They were not related at all, not even in appearance. They were utterly unrelated. But that was okay, because mad people, you expect that. But why one listens so attentively? For what? Because when he says in his own turn, it is something absolutely different, not relevant at all, not to the context at all. He was very much wondering. He became curious. He inquired. He went in and said, one thing makes me very much curious. You listen so attentively to each other, but when you talk, then your talks are not related at all. Then why do you listen so attentively? And they both laughed and they said, we know the rules of conversation. This is the rule of conversation. When one speaks, the other has to listen. And as far as the second thing, that what we say is not related, have you ever heard any conversation which is related? You watch your own conversation. Is it related to what the other has said? Only in appearance. You try to make it related, but only in appearance. Basically, you are like two parallel lines which never meet. Dialogue seems to be impossible. All is monologue. You are talking to yourself and the other is talking to himself. Two monologues together look like a dialogue, only in the appearance. It has to be so, because we use the mind, and mind is the past. Dialogue is possible only between two persons who exist in a state of no mind. Then even silence is communicative. Then even holding the hands is immensely communicative. Then looking into each other's eyes is enough, more than enough. Great understanding arises. You need not complete your sentence and you are understood. Just a small hint. One poet has said, love is when the sentence need not be completed and it is understood. Love is when the language need not be used and one is understood. When silence is dialogue. But that is possible only when you stop this mind's constant rushing into past and future. There is some universal spirit which takes care of everything, of birds and beasts and trees and mountains and rivers and the stars. Can't you see the harmony in existence? Can't you feel some hidden hand taking care of everything? Everything fits so perfectly. It cannot be just a chaos. There is a cosmos. Some hidden power is working behind. Then why you are so much worried about yourself that you have to prepare for tomorrow? No tree prepares for tomorrow. No bird thinks of tomorrow. No beast ever projects for the future. Then why you are unnecessarily worried for the future? Can't you see the cosmos around you? Everything is taken care of. Do you think that universal spirit, God, Tao, Dhamma, will not take care of you? Do you think the universal spirit has abandoned you? Who was taking care of you when you were in your mother's womb? You were not taking care of yourself. You were not worried from where to get oxygen, from where to get food. Something was happening on its own accord. You were fed. The mother was breathing for you. The mother was eating for you. The mother was doing exercises for you. For 9 months, you had not a single worry in the world. No responsibility. Psychologists say that experience of 9 months in the mother's womb is the root cause of the idea of moksha, paradise, heaven. And they are right. Because everybody has that unconscious experience, unconscious memory, that for 9 months there was no responsibility, no worry. All was absolutely beautiful. Things were perfect. Everything was in harmony. That unconscious memory makes you grope for a paradise. The search is again for a womb. Of course, a universal womb, a cosmic womb. You think you are separate. A wave thinking itself separate from the ocean will go mad. A leaf thinking itself separate from the tree will go mad. That's what has happened to man. You are not separate. You cannot be separate. Not for a single moment you can live without being in God. Even when you deny God, God goes on showering life in you. God goes on breathing in you. God is your life. Just meditate over it. The moment you think you are one with the whole, there is relaxation. A sudden let go happens. You need not keep hold of yourself. You can relax. There is no need to remain tense, because there is no private goal to be attained by you. You flow with God. God's goal is your goal. His destiny is your destiny. You don't have a private destiny. The private destiny brings problems. Have you not watched it in your own life? All that you do goes on failing. Still you don't see the point. You think that you didn't do it as it should have been done. That's why it has failed. So you try another project and you fail again. Then you think that your skill is not enough. So learn the skill and then you fail again. Then you think the whole world is against me, or the fate is against me, or I am a victim of people's jealousies. You go on finding explanations why you fail, but you never struck the real ground of your failure. Without God, there is failure. And you are not only without God, you are against God. Then the failure is an absolute certainty. You cannot even succeed accidentally. The man who is without God may succeed sometimes accidentally. Because sometimes he may think he is without God, and he is not. Sometimes his direction and God's direction may be the same. He will succeed. But the man who is deliberately against God goes on failing. He cannot succeed. Success is within God and with God. And remember, by God I don't mean a person somewhere sitting in heaven, but the cosmic spirit. Sense the cosmic spirit, the Tao, the La, that pervades, permeates whole existence, out of which you are born and to which one day you will return.
Thinking cannot be stopped. Not that it does not stop, but it cannot be stopped. It stops on its own account. This distinction has to be understood. Otherwise, you can go mad chasing your mind. No mind does not arise by stopping thinking. When the thinking is no more, no mind is. The very effort to stop will create more anxiety. It will create conflict. It will make you split. You will be in a constant turmoil within. This is not going to help. And even if you succeed for a few moments to stop it forcibly, it is not an achievement at all, because those few moments will be almost dead. They will not be alive. You may feel a sort of stillness, but not silence, because a forced stillness is not silence. Underneath it, deep into the unconscious, the repressed mind goes on working. So there is no way to stop the mind, but the mind stops, that is certain. It stops on its own accord. So what to do? Your question is relevant. Watch. Don't try to stop. There is no need to do any action against the mind. In the first place, who will do it? It will be mind fighting mind itself. You will divide your mind into two. One that is trying to boss over, the top dog, trying to kill the other part of itself, which is absurd. It is a foolish game. It can drive you crazy. Don't try to stop the mind or the thinking. Just watch it, allow it. Allow it total freedom. Let it run as fast as it wants. You don't try in any way to control it. You just be a witness. It is beautiful. Mind is one of the most beautiful mechanisms. Science has not yet been able to create anything parallel to mind. Mind still remains the masterpiece, so complicated, so tremendously powerful, with so many potentialities. Watch it, enjoy it, and don't watch like an enemy, because if you look at the mind like an enemy, you cannot watch. You are already prejudiced. You are already against. You have already decided that something is wrong with the mind. You have already concluded. And whenever you look at somebody as an enemy, you never look deep. You never look into the eyes. You avoid. Watching the mind means look it with deep love, with deep respect, reverence. It is God's gift to you. Nothing is wrong in mind itself. Nothing is wrong in thinking itself. It is a beautiful process as other processes. Clouds moving in the sky are beautiful. Why not thoughts moving into the inner sky? Flowers coming to the trees are beautiful. Why not thoughts flowering into your being? The river running to the ocean is beautiful. Why not this stream of thoughts running somewhere to an unknown destiny? Is not beautiful? Look with deep reverence. Don't be a fighter. Be a lover. Watch the subtle nuances of the mind, the subtle turns, the beautiful turns, the sudden jumps and leaps, the games that mind goes on playing, the dreams that it weaves, the imagination, the memory, thousand and one projections that it creates. Watch, standing there, aloof, distant, not involved. And by you will start feeling. Deeper becomes your watchfulness. Deeper becomes your awareness. And gaps starts arising. Intervals. One thought goes and another has not come. And there is a gap. One cloud has passed. Another is coming and there is a gap. In those gaps, for the first time, you will have glimpses of no mind. You will have the taste of no mind. Call it taste of Zen, or Tao, or Yoga. In those small intervals, suddenly the sky is clear and the sun is shining. Suddenly, the world is full of mystery because all barriers are dropped. The screen on your eyes is no more there. You see clearly. You see penetratingly. The whole existence becomes transparent. In the beginning, these will be just rare moments. Far and few in between. But they will give you a glimpse of what samadhi is. Small pools of silence. They will come and they will disappear. But now you know that you are on the right track. You start again watching. When a thought passes, you watch it. When an interval passes, you watch it. Clouds are also beautiful. Sunshine also is beautiful. Now you are not a chooser. Now you don't have a fixed mind. You don't say that I would like only the intervals. That is stupid. Because once you become attached that you would like only the intervals, you have decided again against thinking. And then those intervals will disappear. They happen only when you are very distant, aloof. They happen, they cannot be brought. They happen, you cannot force them to happen. They are spontaneous happenings. Go on watching. Let thoughts come and go. Wherever they want to go. Nothing is wrong. Don't try to manipulate and don't try to direct. Let thoughts move in total freedom. And then bigger intervals will be coming. You will be blessed with small satoris, mini satoris. Sometimes minutes will pass and no thought will be there. There will be no traffic. A total silence, undisturbed. When the bigger gaps will come, you will not only have clarity to see into the world. With the bigger gaps, you will have a new clarity arising. You will be able to see into the inner world. With the first gaps, you will see into the world. Trees will be more greener than they look right now. You will be surrounded by an infinite music, the music of the spheres. You will be suddenly in presence of God. Ineffable, mysterious, touching you, although you cannot grasp it. Within your reach and yet beyond. With the bigger gaps, the same will happen inside. God will not only be outside, you will be suddenly surprised. He is inside also. He is not only in the seen, he is in the seer also, within and without. By and by. But don't get attached to that too. Attachment is the food for the mind to continue. Non-attached witnessing is the way to stop it without any effort to stop it. And when you start enjoying those blissful moments, your capacity to retain them for longer periods arises. Finally, eventually, one day, you become master. Then when you want to think, you think. If thought is needed, you use it. If thought is not needed, you allow it to rest. Not that mind simply is no more there. Mind is there. But you can use it or not use it. No, it is your decision. Just like legs. If you want to run, you use them. If you don't want to run, you simply rest. Legs are there. In the same way, mind is always there. When I am talking to you, I am using the mind. There is no other way to talk. When I am answering your question, I am using the mind. There is no other way. I have to respond and relate. And mind is a beautiful mechanism. When I am not talking to you and I am alone, there is no mind. Because it is a medium to relate. Sitting alone, it is not needed. You have not given it a rest. Hence, the mind becomes mediocre, continuously used, tired, and goes on and on and on. Day it works, night it works. In the day you think, in the night you dream. Day in, day out, it goes on working. If you live for 70 or 80 years, it will be continuously working. Look at the delicacy and the endurability of the mind. So delicate in a small head. All the libraries of the world can be contained. All that has ever been written can be contained in one single mind. Tremendous is the capacity of the mind. And in such a small space, in fact, it is not making much noise. If scientists someday become capable to create a parallel computer-like mind. Computers are there, but they are not yet minds. They are still mechanisms. They have no organic unity. They don't have any center yet. If someday it becomes possible, and it is possible, that scientists may someday be able to create minds, then you will know how much space that computer will take and how much noise it will make. Mind is making almost no noise, goes on working silently, and such a servant for 70-80 years. And then too, when you will be dying, your body may be old, your mind remains young. Its capacity remains yet the same. Sometimes if you have used it rightly, it even increases with your age. Because the more you know, the more you understand, the more you have experienced and lived, the more your mind becomes capable. When you die, everything in your body is ready to die except the mind. That's why in the East we say, mind leaves the body, enters another womb, because it is not yet ready to die. The rebirth is of the mind. Once you have attained the state of samadhi, no mind, then there will be no rebirth. Then you will simply die, and with your dying, everything will be dissolved, your body, your mind. Only your witnessing soul will remain. That is beyond time and space. Then you become one with existence. Then you are no more separate from it. The separation comes from the mind. But there is no way to stop it forcibly. Don't be violent. Move lovingly with deep reverence. And it will start happening on its own accord. You just watch. And don't be in a hurry. The modern mind is in much hurry. It wants its instant methods. How to stop the mind? Hence, drugs have appeals. You can force by chemical drugs the mind to stop. But again, you are being violent with the mechanism. It is not good. It is destructive. By this way, you are not going to become a master. You may be able to stop the mind through the drugs, but then drugs will become your master. You are not going to become the master. You have simply changed your bosses, and you have changed for worse. Now the drugs will hold power over you. They will possess you. Without them you will be nowhere. Meditation is not an effort against the mind. It is a way of understanding the mind. It is a very loving way to witness the mind. But of course, one has to be very patient. This mind that you are carrying in your head has arisen out of centuries, millennia. Your small mind carries the whole experience of humanity. And not only of humanity, of animals, of birds, of plants, of rocks. You have passed all through those experiences. All that has happened up to now has happened in you also. In a very small nutshell, you carry the whole experience of existence. That's what your mind is. In fact, to say it is yours is not right. It is collective. It belongs to us all. Modern psychology has been approaching it, particularly Jungian analysis has been approaching it, and they have started feeling something like collective unconscious. Your mind is not yours, it belongs to us all. Our bodies are very separate, our minds are not so separate. Our bodies are clear-cutly separate, our minds overlap, and our souls are one. Bodies separate, minds overlapping, and souls are one. I don't have a different soul and you don't have a different soul. At the very center of existence, we meet and are one. That's what God is. The meeting point of all. Between the gods and the world means the bodies, is mind. Mind is a bridge. Bridge between the body and the soul, between the world and God. Don't try to destroy it. I am not in favor of stopping the mind. I am in favor of watching it. It stops on its own accord, and then it is beautiful when something happens without any violence. It has a beauty of its own. It has a natural growth. You can force a flower and open it by force. You can pull the petals of a bud and open it by force. But you have destroyed the beauty of the flower. Now it is almost dead. It cannot stand your violence. The petals will be hanging loose, limp, dying. When the bud opens on its own energy, when it opens on its own accord, then those petals are alive. The mind is your flowering. Don't force it in any way. I am against all force and against all violence, and particularly violence that is directed towards yourself. Just watch in deep prayer, love, reverence, and see what happens. Miracles happen on their own accord. There is no need to pull and push. You ask how to stop thinking? I say just watch. Be alert. And drop this idea of stopping. Otherwise, it will stop the natural transformation of the mind. Drop this idea of stopping. Who are you to stop? At the most, enjoy. And nothing is wrong. Even if immoral thoughts, so-called immoral thoughts, pass through your mind, let them pass. Nothing is wrong. You remain detached. No harm is being done. It is just fiction. You are seeing an inner movie. Allow it its own way, and it will lead you by and by to the state of no mind. Watching ultimately culminates into no mind. No mind is not against mind. No mind is beyond mind. No mind does not come by killing and destroying the mind. No mind comes when you have understood the mind so totally that thinking is no more needed. Your understanding has replaced it.